An Autumn Accord, a Pride and Prejudice novella variation. Chapter 4. Genuine embraces shared between the Bennet sisters and Elizabeth Darcy warms the hearts of the Darcy House staff. Tittering away in a manner only sisters can decipher, the reunion of three was oblivious of the Darcy siblings, enjoying a more formal greeting. Are there presents? I so wish I could travel more. But at least there are always presents when people return. Kitty Bennet tugged on her sister's arm to gain Elizabeth's attention from Mary. How can you show appreciation for a gift you expect? I wouldn't fault our sister for keeping any gift of yours in her possession, Mary remarked. Elizabeth freed her hands to encourage Georgiana Darcy closer. Georgiana, Georgiana, I missed my sisters. That was the only encouragement the youngest Darcy needed to scurry over and find herself in her new sister's arms. And if Elizabeth Darcy hugged Georgiana slightly tighter than her other two sisters, Georgiana merely credited such affection and overabundance to compensate for the newness of their relation. Elizabeth winked at her husband, who hastened to show his aunt to his study for an update on affairs, while she steered the three young women into the parlor. Tell me everything. I've been away from England for ages and ages. Scotland was most beautiful, but I find myself a very confirmed Englishwoman. Elizabeth laughed and noticed Georgiana nod most vigorously in agreement. Mary sees the colonel nearly every day, but she's always cross with him. Mary gasped at Kitty's forwardness. And Lady Matlock makes us study table settings and practice conversations about boring subjects because I giggle too often, she says. Kitty. Georgiana tried to hush her friend and involuntarily glanced towards the door. You weren't threatened with wearing a backboard all day. Kitty dismissed her friend and sister by law. Honestly, I thought Mama's expectations were a bit much when we all lived at Longbourn. The delights of London are thoroughly spoiled for me. Echoing the Catherine Bennet of Longbourn, the youngest lady in the room folded her arms in a pout as she flopped onto the settee. In another time, Mrs. Darcy would laugh and scoff at her younger sister, whom she once thought to be utterly lazy. But the harsh report of Lady Matlock's lessons in such frivolous matters by Elizabeth's standards did not sit well with the intelligence of the summer's events she had received from Jane before leaving Scotland. Still, this was not the time nor place to inquire further. Mary, have you learned any new pieces on the pianoforte? Elizabeth Darcy asked earnestly and caught the attention of the footman who traveled from Scotland with them. In his arms he held the small trunk Elizabeth had specifically packed with gifts and delights from the northern country.
She waved him in and stared expectantly at Mary. Mary stammered a reply, but, along with the younger girls, her attention was fixed upon the approaching footman and his burden.
I had thought to dole these out above stairs, but I find myself too eager for your reactions. Open it, if you please. The footman, Carl, complied with his mistress's request, and the girls held their collective breaths. The trunk revealed bundles of delicate toiletries of Scottish scents and bolts of fabrics in different tartans and calicos. After Catherine Bennet inventoried her portion of the treasures, she wrinkled her nose, as one small detail would not be ignored. Where's Lydia? I thought she was most anxious to leave Scotland and return home. Elizabeth pressed her lips together and observed Mary's hands, shaking as she held a small bottle of foxglove water. It would be the first of many times Elizabeth Darcy would need to say the lie.
Unfortunately, in the last weeks of our holiday, we took a picnic, and the weather turned quickly. Mr. Darcy and I recovered quite well, but Lydia caught a dreadful cold. I wished to delay our departure until Jane and Lydia could return with us. But Jane made a friend, it would appear, with our neighbor Mr. Hamilton.
Another suitor? Jane is the lucky one. Kitty pouted, eliciting an odd look from Georgiana.
But I thought you did not wish to. Oh, I may not wish to marry, but having suitors would please me quite well, I believe. Kitty interrupted Georgiana, and the two younger girls giggled over the outrageous notion of leading a parade of suitors with no intention of matrimony. Talking about Lydia for the first time, and witnessing the silliness she had not missed, Elizabeth Darcy touched her fingertips to her forehead.
Resolving to remain calm, she locked eyes with her sister Mary. With both knowing the truth, a silent nod of solidarity and support allowed them to remain committed to the lies that would save them all.
I am delighted you all love your gifts. Why don't you take them to your rooms, and I'll go see to my husband. Mary, has dinner been set? Before Mary could open her mouth, Georgiana answered. My aunt had Kitty and I planned a menu for many weeks.
Perhaps tomorrow we could review the selections in case you or Fitzwilliam have different tastes.
Georgiana beamed with pride at one of the projects the two had accomplished. Anticipating her new sister and her brother's arrival, she had purposely selected special dishes for last evening's meal, this evening's meal, and tomorrow's evening meal, just to be thorough when anticipating their arrival. Elizabeth smiled at her new sister and reached a hand out to clasp hers.
How truly kind of both of you. It is one less responsibility on my shoulders.
I almost forgot to mention the surprise Fitzwilliam told me as we entered London. In a week, he and I are to visit Hertfordshire to see Mama. Would any of you wish to join us?
The awkward silence and squirming of Georgiana and Catherine Bennet seemed peculiar to Elizabeth, but she dismissed it as harmless mischief when the two of them declined, pointedly looking at one another.
Let them enjoy their intrigues, Elizabeth thought to herself, remembering how difficult that age was to endure. Besides, they had both spent a large portion of their summer months in the county, so she was not surprised to hear them express their wishes to remain in London.
Mary, on the other hand, had an answer that perplexed Elizabeth.
I do so miss our home and our mother, but I fear it would greatly injure and misinform another if I were to leave London at this time.
Making a mental note to speak individually with each girl as soon as she may, Elizabeth Darcy wished them all a farewell as they gathered their gifts, and she left the parlor to walk towards her husband's study. She was most satisfied that experiencing the happy occasion of gift-giving tempered her anger at the person she next needed to address. Opening the door to the study, her presence startled her new aunt, but Fitzwilliam did not react. The two of them continued in a heated discussion, and Elizabeth heard the names of Mary and Richard just as she opened the door.
"Elizabeth, dear, marriage suits you well. You positively light up the house, just as a mistress's return should." Lady Matlock approached her new niece to greet her.
"I thank you for the compliment, my lady." The icy-toned and formal greeting stopped the Countess of Matlock where she stood. She narrowed her eyes, unsure of why she was given such an unexpected welcome.
"Come, come, I thought we dispensed with such formalities long ago. I find that my wife employs formal address when she is piqued. And I must admit that I, too, am rather angry at the lax supervision my sisters enjoy with your family."
Lady Matlock's eyes widened as her own anger began to build. "I dedicated the last 6 months of my life to the Bennet girls and Georgiana, and this is how I am to be appreciated. On two occasions, my eldest sister was forced to physically protect herself while in your care. My sisters and I are without the protection of a father. Surely you must have known how the rakes and scoundrels of society would perceive that. You filled the two youngest girls with lessons and education on matters of social futility. I expected them to be taught not only plate settings, but Plato and Cicero," Elizabeth Darcy said, forcing her breath out behind each word as she struggled to not yell at a peer of the realm. "And that is to say nothing of these ventures my cousin Richard has taken with Miss Mary Bennet. Were you aware she witnessed a killing?"
"This is absurd. The two of you are uncivil to speak to me in this manner.
I shall not endure this upbraiding from a couple that has spent the last 4 months on holiday, while the responsibilities fell to me. I take no leave of you, and perhaps when you both come to your senses and display the proper gratitude, I shall deign to forgive you." Lady Matlock exited the study with the grace of a woman of her exalted station. As Elizabeth Darcy placed a hand on her husband's desk to steady herself, her own anger coiled and burned within. Her husband gently placed his hand over hers. Nearly breathless, the revelation of Mary's mishaps shattered what little defense Elizabeth still held against the guilt of abandoning them to take a wedding trip. Finally, she found her voice.
"I am truly sorry, Fitzwilliam. I never meant to be so harsh with your aunt, but the facts remain. All will be well. Unfortunate mistakes were made in all quarters of our family this year. It will take time to repair the damage."
Elizabeth glanced at her husband's desk covered in correspondence. She expressed a desire to rest and frowned when he responded as she expected. "My darling, I would love nothing more than to extend our holiday to this afternoon. But I'm afraid duty beckons if we are to away again to Hertfordshire. We mustn't go. I was delighted to know of your plans, but perhaps we should stay."
Darcy rose from his chair and embraced his wife firmly.
"I'm afraid there would be more plans to undo if we were to change our minds. Go rest. Visit with our sisters.
I shall see you at dinner and beyond, Mrs. Darcy. Offering her husband a minxish smile, Elizabeth Darcy closed the study door behind her and leaned against it for a moment. The days of travel had indeed caught up with her, and she truly felt a need to sleep. She took the stairs to the family suites, and without her maid's assistance, skipped her room entirely and found her way to her husband's bed. Jane Bennet marveled at how quickly young Master Robin grew in just the short few weeks since her sister and brother-in-law left them to the running of Starvet House. From Robert Bennet's miraculous beginning in the kitchens, all of the staff were spurred to keep watch over the babe. Not an afternoon went by that Jane did not find a maid or even a footman in the nursery, thoroughly embarrassed to be caught by the proxy mistress of the home. Tired from rocking the young man to sleep for the third time that evening, Jane ran into Graham Hamilton in the upstairs hallway on the second floor. "Miss Bennet," he bowed in greeting, but Jane paused and stood flat against the wall so that he might pass. Only he didn't. "Are you making a habit of strolling the halls in the midnight hour?"
Jane narrowed her eyes. "My brother and sister left me in charge of the home in their absence. Perhaps you ought to explain your presence at this late hour."
Graham Hamilton held up his hands in surrender, covered in the gray sealskin gloves he rarely removed to conceal his scars from the fire. "Fair point, my lady. I am here to merely assist you in your efforts. Is the babe finally aslumber?" "I am not titled." Graham flashed her a smile. "Respect offered when due. I shall drive into town tomorrow, and wondered if you might care to join me." Jane's breath caught in her throat as unhappy memories of racing in Mr. Bingley's gig returned her fears to the front of her mind. "I'm afraid I am too occupied with house matters, Mr. Graham. Now, if you will excuse me, Robin wakes so dreadfully early." The man bowed and stepped back to allow her to pass. She did not know he knew of her past, and had promised Darcy not only to protect Jane, but also refrain from frightening or offending her. "Another time, perhaps." Jane merely lifted her hand in acknowledgement of his words, quickening her pace down the hall to her suite. Once inside, she hastened to bolt the lock and leaned heavily against the door. Sliding down to a crouched position, she wrapped her arms around herself and sobbed. Her maid scurried from the dressing room and clicked her tongue in sympathy. "Come, come, Miss Jane, Ice has your remedy on your tray."
"Rose hips and chamomile?"
Jane looked up with her tear-stained face, always confirming her nightly cordial. The maid nodded and helped Jane into her nightdress. Seeing the poor woman in her charge so upset, Millie made a note to tell the nurse to tend to the young lad tonight and not bother her mistress. Mrs. Buchanan had expressly ordered young Millie to keep an eye out for Miss Jane and her stamina. Tucked into the soft white sheets, Starvet House was slowly becoming more and more a comfort to Jane. The rattle of an autumn gale could be heard through the windows, and Jane sat up to slowly sip her tea to help her sleep. "There, there, will there be anything else I'd be getting ya?" the pale-faced maid asked, with her arms full of Jane's dinner gown that likely smelled sour of baby. Jane shook her head and replaced her delicate teacup to the silver tray beside her bed. "Have them summon me if the babe wakes." Her head free of the strain of hairpins, Jane Bennet's eyes fluttered closed, as she forced herself to happily consider how full her life was, not reflect on the feelings of empty loss that dwelled in her heart and threatened every day to take over. For Lydia, she would be strong. For Robin, she would be steady.